Yeah, I'm going to talk about a little bit different topic in a little bit different scale and perspective. The title is written as Crop Systems Modeling Platform for Strategic Decisions. So we are not dealing with farmers. We are more dealing with decision makers, donor community, and a little bit higher level of community. The main project I'm working on is called Harvest Choice, which is a research initiative between IPRI, International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C., and University of Minnesota. And this project started in 2007, and we just finished first phase of the project, and the result I'm presenting here is mostly the collection of showcase of the result from the first phase. And I'll be happy to announce that we just got the news that our second phase is also approved, so we will see another 4 years of similar studies. So our basic conceptual research framework is called CHEF. Our team has a little bit of a funny sense of naming the research frameworks and data product. So the CHEF, we have this notion of cooking up all the data and tools to come up with something that can be useful for other users and clients. So we first trying to define the baseline, what is the current system, current production system, what is the characteristic of farmers, smallholder farmer systems in Sub-Saharan Africa. And we inject changes, we apply intervention scenarios, what if scenarios, and using modeling tools. And in this case, I'm going to talk about crop system simulation modeling tool, and we mostly have been using DSAT, a suite of crop models, and also from EPSIM. And that result is being used by economists and the economic modeling and global trade modeling framework, so that we can use that result of that analysis being used by, again, the donor community and decision makers in strategic sense. So this overall research objective for this modeling component was modeling changes in output, which include yield or crop residue or soil carbon, as a consequence of changes in input, for example, fertilizer irrigation and all those management things. So it may sound simple, and this is just quick result of just one map showing maize yield response for regional scale, and also for individual pixel, we have different rates of nitrogen application and irrigation level and how yield response is. So this kind of result database has been generated by this study. Just to give you an idea of what kind of people I'm dealing with at the IPRI, our institute, is anybody economist in this room? I'm also from crop modeling and background. You will hear from economists saying that we need yield responses from all commodities everywhere, and smiling at you, because the economic models have very different scale of unit area. Like for example, the IPRI's impact simulation, IPRI, global food projection and trade modeling framework has 157 food production unit based around the river basins in global, and this is still subnational level of unit, but this is quite a lot bigger scale. But if you think about how big is the Sub-Saharan Africa, or just Africa, this is larger than US, Europe, China combined. But we have this symptom, we are all suffering symptom, somebody called immappability. This is caused by the Mercator projection being used by Google Maps and Google Earth. You are not truly seeing the true size of the problem if you're just looking at online mapping. But in fact, Africa is vastly big, and when I was struggling with characterization of farming systems, and people are talking about, we have done that in China, so we should be able to do it in Africa, but it's actually the bigger problem. So the basic conceptual idea was, so crop models are point-based model, but if we apply grid-based input data, maybe we can scale up and we can kind of represent what will happen at the grid basis just using the point-based tool. So we need a little bit different set of data. You no longer have a luxury of setting up your weather station in the study site. You need to have some other data sources. So we we needed to have long-term weather series for everywhere, or literally. And the easiest way was just using weather generator. But weather generator, being using weather generator in this context of study had problem of losing spatial correlation. There are tools, more advanced tools out there. I'm started learning about that, but we haven't really used that. So when you lose that, and then you could have flood in one pixel and drought in another pixel because it's just randomly generated, but which is not really ideal if you think about trade modeling framework. So we generated artificially synthesized daily weather for 100 years by combining two data sources. So NASA Power is remote sensing based global 1 degree resolution weather data base, which has about 12 or 13 years of daily weather data globally. CRU, University of East Anglia CRU database gives you monthly climate variables for over 100 years. So we basically combined them together and made a realistic, plausible, or synthesized daily weather data pattern for 100 years. And this is basically by matching the CRU monthly rainfall with the closest total rainfall from NASA Power and plug into that year, which is again another real data, but we found it more useful than using weather generator. Soil data was also a problem. For example, DSET needs just long list of variables that need to be prepared. Some are just one value per profile, and some are layer by layer. You need to have all this information, but again, you don't have the luxury of data in that environment. So we have with Dr. Hugenboom, we worked on this E3WISE 1.1 database where we converted 3,000, Dr. Hugenboom's group converted 3,400 soil profiles into DSET format. So we had this pool of soil profiles, and FAO soil database, harmonized world soil database covered globally and give you polygon-based soil properties. So from there, what we did was, okay, so we have these 3,400 pool of soil profiles, and for each location, we know this just course some idea about soil characteristics and area from FAO soil database. Soil type, texture, carbon content, pH, and water availability. So we try to find the best matching, not just one, but best matching n number of soil profiles and share for each location, each grid cell. So we constructed our own grid-based soil profile database. Management practices were the biggest hurdle, and we still haven't fully figured, and there are lots of ways of doing that. There are different global data sets available, like cropping calendar. There is FAO cropping calendar just released about 2 months ago, particularly focusing on Sub-Saharan Africa, but unfortunately, none of them was georeferenced, so we had a little bit of problem with that. And we developed, with consultation through agronomists, we developed the rule set, like, okay, farmers have this amount of fertilizer, then how they would distribute and apply on different times of the season. So with all this information, we are trying to develop a sense of what the representative management practices in individual pixels. And I will quickly browse through some of the research results. So when you have that many years of weather data, you can quickly run the crop model for everywhere. And seeing what is the, this case is a soil nutrient degradation kind of effect. So we didn't really apply any fertilizer and just let it run through 40 years of time and see how much yield effect comes on. And this case, we did maize in Ethiopia for about 30 years, and we look at varietal yield performances. So when you have a local variety, and when you have hybrid variety, and when you apply fertilizer or not, then what is really advantage? And surprisingly, we found if you don't apply fertilizer, if you don't have enough fertilizer support, then there is no strong advantage of just bringing seed. Conventional wisdom, maybe. And also, we are doing we are using crop model to generate yield responses and use in fertilizer profitability analysis. I haven't seen a couple of presentations even yesterday presenting VCR, the value to cost ratio, and we actually did that for every pixel we could run simulation. And to do that, we also did spatial modeling of prices, spatial modeling of transportation, and also fertilizer costs. So we came up with a very cost ratio for as far as we can simulate. Yield variability, and again, with 100 years of weather data, we ran through potential yield and compare with rainfall variability and how they kind of correlate. And in this case, we aggregated by administrative unit, which is more conceivable for the large of our local collaborators. And give you kind of idea that which area is more suitable, very simply suitable, because you could have high yield in 1 or 2 years, but for long-term weather, then the, even if you have reasonable yield, the variability is too high, then you don't want to push for that area. We are also still doing lots of work on conservation agriculture area, and this one was we used EPSIM model. Particularly, we are taking advantage of intercropping with legumes and maize, and yeah, we did that for East and South Africa area. So this is not the end. We have been doing this for 3 years, but we are certainly still outside of the comfort zone. But I've been hearing that it's still better than counterfactual without using process-based crop model. What policymakers or economists have been doing is just relying on expert judgment, like, okay, for this country, for this area, for this agroecological zone, if farmers double the fertilizer, what will be the yield impact? Then you get some number from your partners, and that becomes the input data for economic model, which is scary. It's not really evidence-based thing. I'm not really making good deal about this approaches yet, because there are still lots of issues. There are choices of model. We did survey last on crop modeling and climate change last month, and there are 122 crop models out there, and there are lots of models and choices of crop, what kind of models can run which kind of crops, and there are still some discontinuity between staple crops in Southern Africa and what crop models are being developed for. And beyond water and nitrogen, there are phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrients. There are lots of constraints that are not yet accounted in this framework, so we are trying to address that. Also, calibration, evaluation, validation. This is all very common issue when you move your crop model out from the point context and being looking at the regional context, how to deal with that. So we are still discussing that issue. And one of the ideas came up recently while we were talking with our Austrian collaborators was this anchoring point, so that you still have this grid notion, but whenever you have good data point, you have good knowledge, then it kind of perform as an anchoring point and give you a validation for your performances. And when as you have more anchoring point available, you could eventually improve your performance. And what's really immediately next for us is refining management practice scenarios. Currently, we are not really adapting, simulating farmers' adaptation. When we have 40 kg of fertilizer, we just do that for 40 years. But it needs to be a little more nuanced based on soil fertility, and we are developing that tool. And we IPRI has a stack of household survey results, so we are trying to get informed by the household kind of behavior from the survey results. And we are trying to calibrate local cultivar characteristics from lots of trial data set out there with collaborators and partners. Thank you.